You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we're welcoming / preparing to learn from Bev Davis, the author of Great Gray, Great Gray Meets New Friends, Namaste Great Gray, and soon to be Winging It. So, Bev, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are
awesome.
You?
Awesome. I'm doing great. I love having authors in the studio here because it's work.
It's work.
It is so much work. Not having you in the studio, but the idea, the writing, the editing, the publishing, in your case, finding the illustrator.
Yeah.
The illustrations and stuff like that, putting that all together and then getting it published. And then once you do all that, now you still have to sell it.
Right.
Market it and all that jazz,
right?
Like, it seems like there's so much work involved. And then, I mean, this is coming from, and I'm an author as well, right? The work that you do in regards to the payout from a cash point of view, it's got to be for the love of the game, not necessarily for the pay of the game.
Definitely.
Right? Mm-hmm. So unless you're Stephen King, I imagine he's probably doing something.
He's probably doing okay.
He's got some advances, I think, are a little bigger. But it's interesting. You can sell thousands of books and still have maybe you can get strawberry jam instead of grape jelly off that funding. You have to get your funding somewhere else is what it comes down to. So you got a few books that you've written. Now, when was the first one published? Been a while?
It's been a few years.
Okay.
I think 2016.
Okay. So what is the... let's just take these first books, right? The Great Gray and the Great Gray Meets New Friends, Namaste Great Gray.
Mm-hmm.
These all kind of center around a main topic, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what is that topic?
Well, the main character is named Great Gray.
Sure.
He's an elephant that's born in captivity.
Okay.
And his... everything was supposed to be perfect. He was supposed to be perfect in every way.
Okay.
But instead of being perfect in every way, in every ways, you know, he's born with one ear perfect and one ear on top of his head.
Uh-huh.
Which makes him look a little different.
Sure.
I think he's very cute.
Okay.
But anyway, he's bullied.
Okay.
He's set aside. He's marginalized. And not only by people and animals and what have you, but his family. His family disowns him.
Sure.
He's not perfect, so he's not worthy.
Okay.
And this came in a dream as I was going through a huge change in my life.
Okay.
Brought back memories of my being bullied as a kid.
Okay.
And what an important, how it kept me from really expanding and growing in the way that I could have.
Sure.
I call myself a late bloomer because this is, you know, I was my mid-50s. I'm going to seminary.
Sure.
But, I didn't have a voice. I never spoke in public.
Okay.
I was very good one-on-one and in my job.
Right.
But speaking in public, no.
So you're going to the seminary, I'm pretty sure you guys have to speak in public.
Yeah, but I didn't think that far ahead.
Stand at the pulpit and look cute, right? Okay.
Yeah, but I was unprepared for that.
All right.
It was a step-by-step thing.
Sure.
And having the dream at the time that I had, it really reminded me of that bullying and helped me move through a lot of it.
Sure.
And learn to heal and be able to speak.
Sure.
Because the very first time that I went into a hospital room to visit with a patient, I had no idea what I was going to say.
Sure.
And it just came to me.
All right.
And it's just funny how things like that work.
Sure.
And I think it's all part of healing.
Right.
And it's just very important for me to help others heal.
Sure. That's fair.
Here I am in my early 70s.
Okay.
And it still hurts.
All right.
And
The bullying. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And not the bullying from the guy back in 1950-something.
Okay.
But you kind of get into a pattern that it's so easy for you to try to please, to try to do the right thing.
Sure.
That you get caught up in this pleasing and then you get easily bullied.
Okay. All right. So you just grew up essentially learning that you are the one to be bullied and therefore you just essentially invited it, not necessarily consciously, but just you were expecting
it. I guess. Yeah.
Okay. So,
but I look at pictures of myself back then and I'm like, you know, why?
Sure.
But, you know.
All right. So
it happens.
So how long ago are we talking? Like, guess what grade were you in when this bullying happens?
Oh, very young. Probably
we're talking kindergarten or?
Probably second, third grade.
Okay.
A long time ago. Yeah.
And was it just one kid or was it just a group of kids?
Well, it was one kid and he was kind of the bully of the whole class.
Sure.
And he even bullied the teacher.
Oh.
He was a really scary guy.
Okay.
But he seemed to zone in on me because I'm just pretty quiet and I like to just sort of be there.
Sure.
I'm a listener. I love to listen.
All right.
And he just zoned in on me and it was a long-term effect.
Sure. All right. Was this small town or is this bigger school?
No, I'm from the south side of Chicago.
Okay.
South.
So there are a lot of kids in the school. It wasn't like there's 10 kids.
Oh, no. We had it was a baby boomer, graduated from high school in 1965.
So
No, it was early. And probably another reason why nothing was ever addressed is because, you know, it was like, oh, boys will be boys, or that's how it
sure.
is. Or I remember somebody saying, oh, he must have a crush on you.
Oh, sure.
You know.
Objection, relevance.
Yeah.
Sure. Interesting. Okay. So would he say things, or did it get more physical, or was it?
It was saying things.
Okay.
To the point where I just stayed quiet.
Gotcha.
Tried to pretend like I wasn't there.
Okay.
And that's pretty much how I lived my life.
Oh.
A lot
of
it.
So this is more, it went beyond just second grade.
Yes.
Same kid?
No. I internalized it.
And okay.
It hurt me so bad that I said, nobody's ever going to want to hear me talk.
Sure. Oh, interesting.
So based here I am
this
talking.
Based on this kid's opinion?
That kid ended up getting support in other places, too.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Yeah, there was a kid in the neighborhood, too, that was,
Not ideal.
Not ideal, right.
So I know, even Sun Prairie here, and I imagine just about every other town is having conversations about bullying and stuff like that. How do you think that the schools could fix that?
Well, there's a lot of things. I'd say keeping it open so that people who are bullied or don't even know they're being bullied are safe to tell the teacher, to tell someone.
Sure.
Parents need to be open and watch and see because they're not all going to come home and say, Mom, so-and-so bullied me today, hit
me. Right.
They're going to hold it inside. I don't think I ever said anything to my family. I just held it all inside.
And why do you think that is?
Because I was convinced that nobody really wanted to hear me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, here
we are. I suppose 1960s, right? We got other stuff going on.
Yeah. Sort of like that, I guess.
Sure. Interesting.
Just not important. You know, women back then, little girls back then were supposed to be seen and not heard or just be cute. And, a lot of time has passed and people might ask, too, why is this still bothering her at this age? It's because it's all come back to me through this book.
Sure.
And with bullying, it's always been there. It's never gone away. But I think it's getting a lot more play now.
Sure.
And thank goodness because we have so many people who are hurting.
Sure.
Hurting and don't know what to do with that hurt.
Right.
I just saw something on Facebook about a young man who was gay and came out on social media and he didn't know what to do with that and he actually killed himself.
Oh.
So we've got to, got to give people a safe place to talk.
Sure.
A safe place to be.
Right.
You know, if I would have had a place maybe in my school where I could have just gone and, I looked for places in the school.
Just to hide?
I could just hide, just be alone so I wasn't bugged.
So just during recess or something like that, this kid would probably hunt you down?
Yeah, he was hunting me. Yeah.
All right. So you knew recess wasn't a relaxing playtime.
No.
It was It was work because you're on the run from this guy.
Right.
Okay.
On the run.
And that went for years?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I even went to high school with him.
But, with the same kid?
Same kid.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah.
And is he just, where's he at now? Selling insurance?
Well,
or jail?
It's funny that you mentioned that in the insurance part.
That's where I assume. I probably shouldn't say this.
No.
It doesn't
insurance
matter.
Insurance is good. We need insurance. But.
Different topic, right?
Different topic. We don't need to get into that.
All right.
I think it might have been about 4 or 5 years ago, I woke up in the middle, after I wrote the book.
Okay.
I hadn't quite published it yet.
Sure.
I woke up in the middle of the night, I think it might have been 1 or 2 in the morning.
Okay.
And his name came to my mind.
Okay.
Boom. I didn't thought about his name for...
Okay.
So, of course, because we were in this age of Googling...
Sure.
I went to the computer and I put in his name.
Right.
And it said his name and then it said obituary.
Oh.
And I'm like... Hmm,
and you're like, oh, that's too bad.
And I saw his picture, and I read his obituary, and he had been killed in a motorcycle accident.
Oh, okay.
And there was a picture of him standing next to his big motorcycle.
Okay.
And he had the same smirky face that he had all the time I knew him.
All right.
And I didn't know how to feel.
Sure.
I didn't know how to feel. Should I feel sad for him? Should I feel free?
Sure.
I didn't know how to feel.
Okay.
But since then I've processed it and I do feel free and I'm like, wait a minute. This guy was running my life and he was already dead.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll give you a wake up call. You know?
It's like totally.
This guy, I've been letting him run my life. He doesn't even know that he's running my life.
Right.
He's riding around on his motorcycle. Unfortunately, that happened to him.
Right.
But,
so you'd been playing, you know, the victim, and this guy had no idea,
the victim,
right? Because you think that
he internalized it.
Did he go through the steps of bullying you for decades like you did of, I mean, do you believe that he did?
No, I'm sure he never thought another thing about me after we graduated and he went on his thing. And I never thought about him either, but I had internalized the feeling of not being heard,
mm-hmm.
not being worthy of being heard,
mm-hmm.
you know, talking in class.
Sure.
So I never spoke in class. I just kept very quiet.
Sure.
Now, I was able to, you know, I had work. I was an interior designer.
Okay.
In Chicago. I had my own business in
Chicago.
Oh,
nice. Okay.
And
right
so
after
I was
high
able,
school, or did you go to school for that?
I went
or?
To school for it.
Okay.
But not right away, you know,
sure.
it just sort of happens slowly.
Okay.
And I was able to do that, and I was very successful in that, but
mm-hmm.
it was all one-on-one.
Sure.
If I had to stand up in front of somebody and teach a class on interior design,
right.
even though I knew everything about, you know, what I needed to,
right.
I still wouldn't have been able to do it because I didn't think anybody wanted to hear me.
All because of this bully way back when?
Way back when.
Oh, interesting.
We can't blame it all on him, but that's the starting
part. You know, it's, I don't know if you want to hear this or not, but I would not blame it much on him.
Okay.
Right? And the reason being, what his intention was, right? It was either love or fear in his communication, right? He was obviously feeling fear, so he tried to, that's why he picked on the weak, right? He didn't pick the biggest kid in the world to bully, right? He picked a quiet girl,
mm-hmm.
right? Which, right, that alone there says that that's clearly fear.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's obviously or unlikely that it's love, or at least it's not communicated the way that it would be love. So I'm going to say that it's fear. And if it's fear, that means that he has a problem that is unrelated to you, right? And
mm-hmm.
unrelated to the bullying.
Oh, sure.
And he has no idea why that's happening, right? Does not justify it.
I know that now,
right.
but when you're a little 9-year-old kid.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know,
Santa Claus is still a thing.
Your father has passed away. Your mother
sure.
was a single mother.
Right.
You can't go to her. It just gets very internalized, and you don't even remember. You know, I probably wouldn't have thought of his name had I not had that dream.
Sure.
I mean, that's part of the story is
right.
why did I have that dream and
sure.
why did I have the dream that became the book?
That's fair.
I really feel that that's my mission.
Okay.
And one of my missions, but my primary mission right now, I believe, is telling people you're not alone.
Sure.
There's somebody, you know, as a hospice chaplain, I worked with people who were at the end of their lives.
Oh.
And they were both. They remembered times that they were bullied.
Sure.
They lost their voices too.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So it's not a simple thing.
No. Absolutely not. No, I think there's a lot of psychology going on there. There's a lot of social events that are going on that are contributing. I guess there's the time of the year.
Time of the year.
There's the, I guess 1965. That was a way different time than it is now. Better or worse, really. Go either way in that regard.
Want to go back.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? There wasn't like the social bullying aspect.
No.
Or the social media bullying,
no.
Right? Where that's prevalent now. Where you could kind of punch the clock after school and you go home and do whatever. Where now a lot of kids don't have that. Or they're not choosing to have that, right?
We were in a neighborhood school, so everybody was kind of in the same neighborhood.
Okay.
You might see those same kids
sure.
in the park.
Okay.
Because the school that I went to had a wonderful program on the playground for after school.
Okay.
And so I spent a lot of time there, and I did
sure.
really, the teacher there was really very important to my life and
okay.
to helping me grow.
Sure.
She, it was wonderful.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. So did you have any other friends that helped you or that you could talk to?
Well, as a kid, I was, you know, a neighborhood friend, you know,
okay.
girls. And
sure. Were they getting bullied by this person as well?
I was getting the most.
Okay. You're taking the brunt.
I think so. It just maybe it affected me more because I think I'm a very sensitive person.
Sure.
You have to be sensitive to do what I'm doing
right.
as chaplain, and you have to be a good listener.
Sure.
And I just think I'm just highly sensitive to that.
That's fair. That's totally fair.
And there's nothing wrong with that because
right.
it's who I am.
Right.
It's just I think people who are bullies.
Right.
I think they hone in on that. Hone in on it? Well, you know what I mean.
Hone in on your
sensitivity.
Well, sure, because they want a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole goal, right? They don't bully rocks.
And I don't remember reacting, but I do remember just being very quiet.
That's
so
enough,
I guess
though.
That was the reaction. Because
they know that you can hear, right?
Yep.
And they can probably see your face turning red. They can see the look on your face.
Probably.
They're getting a reaction of some kind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, I mean, you don't know if maybe this kid is thrown around at home or something like that, so they're trying to find somebody weak to pick on. Or
well, now that I'm much, much older, I can reason that.
Right.
You know, like
does not justify it though.
But it does not justify.
No, not even a little.
Not
even a little.
Not at all.
No.
But you know, I just feel if I've had that and I've grown up, and it still can affect you at this age.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to do something about it because
sure.
you know. It doesn't go away. I think people think that, when you're a kid, it's going to, you know, it's going to grow.
Right.
Like my son was bullied. And
sure.
I didn't even have the tools to help him
because
I felt the bullying through him.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So what did you do?
What did I do? I mean, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Okay.
I was always there with him. You know,
okay.
I was there with him. I was ready. I was there listening.
Okay.
But I was feeling his pain at the same time.
Sure.
And I think we've just become closer because of that.
Sure.
And
you know, it's interesting because I look at my life when I was a kid, and there are times that I can say that I was bullied, but I wouldn't say that it was routine to the point, like the same person or anything like that. And but I guess I can remember a time when I was bullied by a kid and I beat the snot out of that kid and I didn't get bullied by him anymore. So that's a different, I guess there's, I don't know if I could get away with that now.
Probably. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a different world now.
It's not something I would have react, you know, I'm a peace girl.
Sure, right.
So it's not something I would...
Yeah, it's just different perspectives
and
different, I imagine, abilities from that. I wasn't in the... There's no way that I could have rationalized with that kid.
No.
And I was not one to sit still and be quiet. I guess that's why I have a radio show. I want to talk all the time, right? So it's interesting because you look... And I got a kid now, right? 5-year-old kid. And I imagine he's going to have to deal with bullies. And I'm going to have to teach him not to be a bully, because I imagine there's going to be times when any kid or any person, right, when they're in some position of power, we see grown-ups now in very high positions.
Oh, yeah.
Flexing, trying to use their position of power to essentially bully people.
Mm-hmm. Get
right?
Way.
And there's different reactions, right? And you can either be a victim and just say, woe is me, I'm a victim. Or you can say, how can we improve this? How can we stop this from happening more? How can we use, how can we make the world a better place by utilizing this tool, right? So
true.
It just, it's adapt, improvise, and move on, right? That's what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
So let's dial back to your interior designer. What made you decide to become an interior designer?
That's a good question. I when I graduated from high school, a long, long time ago.
Sure.
I was expected to be a secretary.
Okay. Expected by your family?
My family.
Or? Okay.
Everybody else in my family had gone on to be a secretary. And so I took all this secretarial stuff, and I was horrible at it.
Oh, no.
I hated it.
Just didn't like the typewriter?
No. Still not a fan of it, but I use it. But I felt like that was my, I was like stuck in that mold.
Oh, okay.
So I worked at that, and I found a decent job where I could be a dictaphone secretary or something.
Okay.
And I was okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still looking for something creative, because I've always been creative.
Okay.
And I was reading the Chicago Tribune magazine, and there was an ad for an interior design school called Harrington Institute of Interior Design. And I went, there are schools for that? So I signed up. I went in the evening for 3 years while I worked at the other job.
Sure.
And I did it for a while, and then when I had children, I stopped. But I went back when my kids were a little bit older.
Sure.
And I just started. I worked part-time in a paint store, and he didn't even know I had the degree in interior design.
The owner of the paint store?
The owner of the paint store.
They didn't know you had a degree in interior design?
No. I was just working in the paint store, working on the wallpaper.
All right.
And then one day I said to him, I didn't tell you this, but I'm an interior designer. I'd love to start, you know, doing things. And he supported me by paying for wallpaper and paint and paper to be in to do a model room.
Sure.
In the neighborhood.
Okay.
So that's where I got started. I got clients from that.
All right.
Got started again, and I was able to do that all through my kids' grammar school, high school.
Wow.
All
right.
And then I went to work for Marshall Fields.
Okay. So wow. So did you have you had your own business then?
I had my own business.
Okay.
And then I went, as kids got older and I realized I needed, was going to need insurance and stuff like that. So I went to work for one furniture store, and then I went to Marshall Field State Street store, which was my dream job.
How long ago are we talking though?
We're talking in the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Isn't that so weird that health insurance was a thing back then?
It's always going to be a thing.
Sure. That's interesting.
We won't go there.
All right. Fair. Totally fair. Okay. So you worked, because you said Marshall Field's on State Street, and I was thinking, wait, when was this?
Well, now it's Macy's.
On State Street?
Yeah.
State Street?
It's Marshall Field. I mean, Chicago.
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 I was thinking Madison. Like,
oh, yeah. I forgot where I was.
I don't want to break this to you, but there's no Macy's on State Street. Okay. In Chicago. Got it.
Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe I'll be saying that in a couple of years anyway. So, doesn't matter. Hitting all kinds of edges
that's
and topics
where I grew,
here.
That's where I grew up. That's where I thought I'd live my entire life. And here I am in Madison, which I love.
The grand old Madison. It's all good.
I love it.
So, you worked for Marshall Fields for a little bit, and then you decided, hey, this isn't for me?
I loved what I did,
mm-hmm.
but there was always something missing.
Okay.
And I can point to a spot right here on my chest, my sternum.
Sure.
And it suddenly became obvious that I needed to go to seminary.
Wow. Okay. That's a 180 degree shift then.
Tell me about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you decided.
And I didn't think anything about preaching, or I just knew I was needed to go to seminary, needed to follow this call.
Sure.
Didn't know where I was going with it.
So did you quit your job?
I quit my job.
And went to seminary. And seminary, I don't know, is that a six-week thing? Is
3 years.
3 years.
I lived 3 years in McCormick Theological Seminary.
Wow.
Yep.
All right. That had to be a change. Were you married?
Oh, my goodness. No, I was divorced at the time.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
My kids were grown.
Like 20s or?
In their 20s,
okay.
Yeah.
So,
in fact, my daughter asked me if I could, when I go to seminary, will I be able to give telephone calls? She thought I was going to like a monastery or something. But no, it was just.
I would have.
But
no
it
idea.
Was very, very, very intense.
All right.
And for somebody who has an art background to go back and study theology and sure. Greek and Hebrew and you name it,
right?
It was intense. So it's a miracle.
How did that conversation go with your kids?
Well, I'll tell you, my son Gavin is gay,
mm-hmm.
and we raised our kids in a Quaker meeting, a peace church in Beverly area, and but on the news, in news and on the Christian churches, the very right wing evangelical churches,
sure.
Don't approve of gay.
Right. Are we talking 80s now, or when are we talking?
Today.
Today. I mean, like when you went to seminary.
Oh, when I went to seminary. I graduated in 2007.
Okay. Oh, so not that long ago. 10, 15. Okay.
So Gavin says to me, Mom, why would you want to be a minister? They don't like us.
Fair.
And I said, I hope you know, there would be nothing that I would ever do or ever be part of that wouldn't love you and care about you and
sure.
accept you.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that now.
Sure.
But how scary that was. Your mother that you've, been part of your life
right.
for always.
Right.
For her to say, I'm going to seminary, and then him to immediately think, well, does she love me? Is
right.
she going to leave me? Is she going
right. It's like being a Jewish family and saying, I'm going to go join the Nazis just for a really quick stint, right? Like,
No.
I'm just going to raise my hand a little bit.
I'm probably not quite that bad.
Okay. Interesting. I imagine that had to be scary for him, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did your other kids react?
Well, my daughter wanted to know if I could get telephone calls.
Okay. All right.
And I did.
Sure.
And, in fact, she invited me to meet her
mm-hmm.
downtown at when Borders was still a bookstore.
Sure, okay.
It was Kitty Corner to Fields on State Street.
All right.
And we met an author named David Sedaris.
Okay.
You hear about him on NPR a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And she really likes his writing.
Okay.
And we met him. And I was just in seminary maybe 2 or 3 months. And
yeah.
I got to the front of the line, my turn, and he says to me, what's your name? And I said, Bev.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Bev, what do you do for a living? That's how we talk. And what do you do? I said, well, until about 6 months ago, I was an interior designer across the street at Marshall Fields, but now I'm in seminary. And he stopped and he thought and he said, does that mean you're going to be a reverend? And I had not even thought of it at that time.
Oh.
I hadn't gone that far. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Man, you just took the leap having no idea what you were getting into.
Oh, you betcha.
All right.
And then he said, and will you have a flock?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. This guy's my hero.
So I went,
now.
Oh! Boy, talk about getting a reality, bite of a reality
sure.
sandwich, But that's when it became real to me.
Sure.
I probably am going to be ordained, and I will have a flock. And I did. I do.
Sure.
So, yeah, it made it very real.
All right.
And,
so interesting.
That's
so you okay?
Where it came real in Borders.
So you made it a few months into seminary, and they didn't allude to like, hey, you're gonna have to present in front of a bunch of people.
Oh,
bunch
they probably everybody assumed it, but me.
A bunch of people are gonna be looking for guidance from you.
Well, I knew that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But I still hadn't thought about.
And you gotta
get standing up and talking okay. in front of people.
Like I don't know what religion you're being a seminary for, and I don't.
It's Protestant, okay. United Church of Christ.
So you guys UCC. Still meet Sundays and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And it's a group of people listening to one
yeah.
person,
yeah.
priest or rabbi or whatever.
I preached on Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And you weren't aware that that was going to happen?
I didn't think that far.
So you had gone to church, right?
Yeah.
And you knew like that person is the, what are they called? Is it
yeah.
priest?
Yeah.
Okay. And you didn't, you weren't
no,
inspired
pastor.
As a pastor. Okay. And you didn't say, I want to be that person?
Well, I would say to myself, boy, I wish I could talk like him.
All right.
But I didn't think I could.
So you go to the seminary school to become that? Or to learn
guess
how?
Guess so.
Okay, it's a skill, sure.
Guess so.
Makes sense,
but I
right?
still didn't think that I'd have anything important to say.
Oh, there's a lot of people that talk that don't have anything important to say. So that's a minor detail.
Yeah, well.
And it's got to be a learned skill, I'm thinking, because nobody comes out of the womb and just jumps on their soapbox and starts babbling,
I don't know.
Right?
I think some people might.
That's fair. That's
totally... I've met a lot of people who seem like
that. Sure.
They've never read. I look at some people sometimes and I'm like, boy, when do they take a breath? Because some people just can talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And they've got such interesting things to say.
Right.
And I'm just looking at them, just dumbfounded because they're making all this sense. And when do they breathe? When do they take a stop?
All right.
And I'm listening. But I'm also an introvert, so I don't, you know.
So at the seminary school, did they teach you how to present or how to?
Well, I did take a class and sermon.
Okay,
and
a class?
A class.
Just one, preaching. Like, stand up, read your notes, whatever.
Well, it was a little more than that. And I didn't think that I would be a preacher. Chaplains don't generally preach.
You guys just hang in the back, you're the right-hand woman to the preacher, like, you don't talk?
No, the chaplain is the person who, when you go into a hospital or you go into a nursing home. You're going to the hospital. That's where I did it first.
Okay.
And they're the person that would come into your room and ask if you wanted to talk.
Okay.
And they can be one particular religion, but as a chaplain, you don't represent a particular religion. You're there to be present with the person where they are at the time.
Sure.
And that I'm able to do that.
Okay.
And
so you have to go to seminary school to do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Not all chaplains have doctors of Master of Divinity, but they have.
Master of Divinity. That is a business card title and a half. Holy cow. Master of Divinity.
Hey, I'm master.
That is pretty cool. Okay. Interesting. So the intention was to be a chaplain at a
chaplain,
hospital.
Hospice.
But they have church service at hospitals, right?
Yeah.
Would the chaplains run that?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes.
Did you ever have to run that?
Later on.
Okay. And did you get stage fright?
Yeah. I still get stage fright.
Do you really?
Of course.
I'm so interesting right now. You're talking to a guy who I just came from presenting at a place that, I don't know, had 40 people or whatever. And it was just talking to people, right? Having fun with them. High-fiving and stuff. I don't know if they do that in mass, whatever. Maybe they could. Relax people a little bit.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You're relaxing me, but ordinarily, this isn't something that I would have ever thought about doing, but it's something I need to do.
Sure.
Because we need to address this bullying.
Absolutely.
You know, there are a lot of people who are like me who haven't spoken. But
sure.
They've got something to say.
Sure.
They've got businesses they'd like to run.
Right. Fair. You know? Totally fair. So I imagine when you're chaplain, you're talking with some people, mm-hmm. and they're probably saying things to you that they're either problems or issues that mm-hmm. you may or may not be in a position to fix. How do you deal with that?
Well, you're not a fixer.
Okay. Just
First
an ear.
First of all, you're an ear.
Okay.
If there is something that is fixable, like I need a glass of water or something.
Right. Sure. I've been bullied all my life and I'm pretty thirsty. Well,
but
a glass of water.
I've been with people who have been bullied. I've been with people who have been sexually abused. I was even with a person who murdered someone and never told anybody.
All right.
And he felt safe enough with me.
Sure.
To tell me that. And, you know, he was able to pass away.
Okay.
In peace.
Sure.
So I think it's a good amount of what I do is just being there, being present, holding their hand.
Right.
If they want to pray, we pray. If they don't want to pray, we don't pray.
Sure.
I am who I am, but I'm not going to force myself or my religion on anyone.
Sure. Fair.
It's being present. That's what you need to be.
Okay. Okay.
And there are so many people in nursing homes and senior communities and children who don't have visitors. Like 10% of people who are in retirement homes get visitors.
10%?
10%. Maybe it's
only
more now.
10% get visitors. The other 90% just don't get them at all.
No. Well, they don't have, their family's not there. Their families just thinks, well, hey.
Wow.
It's sad.
That's incredibly
sad. And I
just
love being with those people and learning their stories. Oh my gosh, I've learned so many
wonderful
stories.
I always thought
it
would be cool to go to a nursing home and just ask to hear some stories.
You would rock there.
I bet it would be cool. Because, like, I always think about this. Like, I get into cars, right? And I got this picture of a Tucker. I don't know if you know what a Tucker is. 1948,
right? Yeah, they used to be built in Chicago.
Yeah. So I'm thinking there are guys that engineered these things and worked, like, even if they worked on the assembly line, they got to have some stories. Even the guys that wrote the ad copy for them or something like that, right? They got to have super cool stories that once they pass away, there's no one documenting that. There's no one saying, this is how it was, or this is what we had to do, or you wouldn't believe this one time, you know, X, Y, Z, whatever, even take it beyond Tucker, anything.
And it's just very important that they remember who they are, not who they were.
Right. Because
they'll say, well, I used to be an artist. I'm like,
sure,
you're still an artist.
Right.
But your art is in a different way.
Sure.
You know, a different medium. Or,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I had one hospice patient who wasn't also an interior designer back in the day.
Okay.
And in Chicago. So I connected with her on that, and she loved art, and I set up an art gallery for her in her hallway.
Yeah.
And I would take and show her her art, and I'd remind her of the Art Institute and places like that. And, you know, I don't know if she remembered it, but I was I was teaching her, talking to her,
right,
not asking her, how do you feel?
Right.
What's
wrong
with you?
Did you take your pills today?
Yeah.
Did you have a bowel
just
movement?
Just being present. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's pretty cool.
And, yeah.
Huh. So 90% need a visitor.
It's a blessing.
All right. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
So you had this, you went to seminary school. You're learning that, hey, we got to talk to people, get your flock, all that jazz. At what point does this dream come in play?
Okay. Well, I graduated from McCormick Theological Seminary in Chicago.
Okay.
I interviewed for a chaplain residency program in Wausau, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Now, I chose Wausau because my son went to school for a little bit in Stevens Point.
Oh, sure.
And I liked that area.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to be somewhere where I would be out of Chicago, I could afford to live on my own, and just, you know, start over, I guess.
Sure.
I don't know what was on my mind.
Right.
But anyway, I found the cutest little house in Wausau, and the plan was to be there 1 year.
All right.
And to go back and work in Chicago.
Okay.
And I wasn't going to make any friends. I was just going to be kind of a hermit.
Like, you specifically, you went there with the intention of not to make any friends.
Okay. That didn't work.
All right.
Beyond 2 days.
I'm going to assume that's a good thing.
No, I just didn't want to get distracted. I wanted to, you know. And
don't say hi to anyone.
Well, no, I wasn't going to be totally unfriendly. But, you know, anyway, it didn't work.
Sure, okay.
I made
so made
friend the very first day. Yeah,
okay.
She lived 2 blocks away from me, and she's still my great friend, and she lives now in Madison. And
okay.
She was in the clinical pastoral education class with me.
Oh, wow, okay.
And the day shortly into our program, I had this dream.
Yeah.
And I went into the hospital the next day, and I just told her, her name is Paulette.
Yeah.
I said, Paulette, I had a dream last night, and I explained it to her, and she says, you better write that down. There's something about that. And I went, oh, really? Really?
Smart friend.
Yeah. So I do what Paulette says, and most of the time.
Sure.
And then, so I wrote it down and I put it away and kept going back to it and coming back to it. And I just kept working on it and I kept putting it away. And then I would meet other people who I felt could use this book. And then I'd work on it some more. And then I'd show it to people and they'd say, Bev, this is great. You know, you need to do something with it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, after a while of putting it off and expecting to be, you know, like, this is, nobody's going to want to read it because that's what I was expecting.
Sure. That's what every author thinks.
Yeah.
Initially, anyways.
So anyway, I talked to a friend who also has books published by the same word, verb.
Yeah.
And showed it to her, and she said, you need to send this to my editor. She's going to love it.
Sure.
I'm like, really? So I sent it to her, to the word, verb, to Janet Fix.
Okay.
And she read it and said, let's publish it. And in fact, I can see a picture of Great Gray on the wall of my granddaughter's bedroom.
Oh.
And being a visual person,
yeah,
immediately I was like, oh, yeah. So that gave me the courage
okay.
to go forward.
Sure.
So we got the one book, and I thought, well, that'd be done.
Yeah.
Well, we did that. Nobody's going to want to buy it. And then we did, I got the second book.
Right.
And now the third. And
then Namaste, Great
Grain. Another one. Mm-hmm.
So why, so these are all, I want to say, Indian.
They are Indian.
Right. So how did they end up like that?
That's an interesting question.
Okay.
That was in the dream.
Oh, really?
In the dream, yeah. Everything, you know, I fleshed it all out. But
sure.
But the dream was a complete dream. And it was in India.
With an elephant.
With the elephant.
Okay.
With an ear on top of his
all
head.
All right.
And,
That is a complete dream.
It's a complete dream.
Wow, man.
And it wasn't a happy dream either, because he got bullied, and then, you know, the better ending.
Sure.
But anyway, the only thing I can think of is I've always wanted to go to India, I've been interested in India.
Sure.
But I've been interested in a lot, so.
Sure.
But I had a pastor, when we went to the Quaker meeting, mm-hmm. some Quaker meetings have pastors. They're called program meetings.
And there are still Quakers around?
Of course.
Really?
Yes.
I just thought that was a Revolutionary War thing.
No. There's a Quaker meeting in Madison.
All right.
Okay.
This is me being out of touch here.
No, there's a very famous...
I talk with entrepreneurs and stuff. I don't, not a whole lot of Quakers.
Lot of Quakers. Well, yeah, they are. A lot of Quakers are very business-minded.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's another week.
All right. That's fair. Totally fair.
Where was I?
So are you talking about the dream, complete dream?
Okay, the dream.
You wanted to visit India, or just that's a popular thing?
My Quaker pastor's name mm-hmm. is P.V. Chandy.
Okay.
And he's from the southern part of India, which is Christian.
Okay.
It's called Kerala, India. And he is a very big influence in my life.
Okay.
And when I started thinking about going to seminary or going to chaplain, he's the one who encouraged me into chaplaincy.
All right.
So I think P.V. was right there in my mind.
Sure.
As he is a lot.
All right.
And his whole family is a lot.
Sure. Interesting.
One of the characters, two of the characters are named after, one is named after his son, and one is named after his granddaughter.
Oh, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
So the illustrations are pretty neat. How did you find the illustrator?
Through the editor,
okay.
Jan. This is, she gave me drawings from three illustrators.
Okay. Drawings of Great Gray initially,
no,
I
just
imagine, right?
Her...
Or just
portfolio.
Broad art.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I saw Linda Cowan.
Yeah.
And I also saw that she was in Australia.
Oh, nice.
So in my crazy little brain, I was like, well, she should be able to draw an Indian elephant.
Right. That's so... Just across a bridge. You're right there.
But we connected immediately. She knew what I needed and how I needed it.
All right.
And we really, really... connected.
Nice.
And all three books.
All right.
And now she's retired.
Okay.
So there'll be no more great, great books.
No more great, great. And the Winging It book that's coming?
The Winging It, yeah.
Did she illustrate for that?
No, I have a new illustrator for that one.
Okay.
And it's a different feel.
Okay.
Because the Winging It is about one specific monarch butterfly that
sure.
we helped fledge, save the, you know, how we fledged first time.
Okay.
Back in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
Done a lot since then, but this was the first one, and it was very scary because I was afraid to kill it.
Sure.
I was given a jar.
They're so fragile.
They're so fragile. And I had this friend who's really, really, particular.
Sure.
And she gave me the jar, and it had a little caterpillar,
mm-hmm.
and I had to feed it milkweed.
Okay.
And I knew that after a couple days, it would go into a chrysalis.
Mm-hmm.
And then in about 15 days later, it would come out. But I was just so worried that I was going to screw it up and kill,
kill this little caterpillar.
But we didn't. It came touch and go very much. But
sure.
It has a very happy ending.
Nice. Well, very cool.
But it's just to encourage people who love to look at butterflies, but I wouldn't want to touch a caterpillar. I wouldn't want to...
Sure.
You know, I can't do that. But
all
if
right.
you read my book, you can and you will want
sure.
to.
So the word Verve is your publisher.
Mm-hmm.
How did they find you, or did you find them?
I found them through my friend who now lives in Mississippi. She's written books. She has early onset Parkinson's disease.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
And she's written 3 or 4 books on Parkinson's.
Okay.
Mainly to her son, who was very young when she was.
Diagnosed. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
He was maybe 5, and now he's just starting college.
Oh wow! Okay.
So she's written 3 or 4 books to him, and that's when I sent it to her.
Yeah.
She used to live in Chicago.
Okay.
We went, and I knew she'd be honest, and
sure.
She said to go for it. So.
All right. So why not? What do you got to lose? Pretty much literally, what do you have to lose? Hey. Worst case, you just hang out at a radio station, right?
Another leap of faith.
Best case, you become New York Times bestseller, right?
Yeah,
or something
that'd be
of that
nice.
Nature, right?
That'd be nice.
So, how do you, like, do they promote the books, or I guess different publishers do
a little
different
bit.
Things? So.
Yeah, it's on Amazon.
Okay.
And it's on her website.
Okay.
And
her being the
her
the
as in
publisher.
The word verb.
Okay.
V-E-R-V-E.
Okay.
But for the most part, it's up to me.
Sure.
Because really, how else are you going to learn about the book except through the author? It's
sure.
Not like you can just put it on a shelf. It's got
sure.
It has so many layers to it and so
yeah.
much depth, different ways.
Sure.
I love to just talk about it,
mm-hmm.
and I love to give, you know, go to schools and
sure.
talk to the kids and talk
right.
to the adults.
Right.
I just did a presentation at the library in DeForest.
With more than one person in there.
With more than one
Look
person
at that.
In there, yeah. And it was myself and the school counselor.
Okay.
And we gave a team talk.
Sure.
And it went really well.
Specifically about bullying or specifically
bullying,
about the books?
My bullying, the book.
Okay.
What they're doing to help, you know, curb.
Sure.
Bullying,
mm-hmm.
and they have quite a plan in,
sure.
in DeForest.
Right.
So yeah, so I'm anxious to do that in other libraries.
Interesting.
In different places too.
So how long have the books been out? The first book, I should say. Let's start there.
The first book, I think 15.
Okay, so it's been 4-ish years, right?
Yeah.
Ballpark. So have you seen progress as far as sales, or do schools buy them, or I guess what has worked for you?
Well, it's been kind of slow because I have had a full-time job
sure.
recently.
Interior designer?
No. Chaplain.
Are you still doing the chaplain thing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And but now I'm still doing some chaplain, but I'm primarily working
All right.
getting my books and All speaking right. as much as I can.
Sure.
Interesting. Because I really feel that's just very important.
Yeah, to get the word out there, right?
Yeah.
All right.
And, you know, it's like you want to test the waters, and
mm-hmm.
I'm a great tester. And every time, but every time I take that leap of faith and try to get it out, it
sure.
another door opens. So I must be doing
Very
something
true.
Right.
It doesn't hurt, wait. Right?
Right.
Do
I'm
something.
Sitting here with you.
Right, right. You're doing something right, totally. So what's been the best part about publishing these books?
Oh, just talking to people and
okay.
hearing their, well, same thing, hearing their stories
sure.
and helping them. You know, I've had some kids who were bullied, and
yeah.
they'll say, well, that's me. And then
mm-hmm.
that, so I think that story help gives them,
sure.
you know, help. Just listening and
okay.
sharing.
Sure.
I just was in a book festival last Saturday.
Okay.
In Columbus.
Oh wow.
Wisconsin.
Columbus, Wisconsin. Okay.
Yeah. And that was really nice. It was at the it was called Oddtoberfest.
Oddtober, nice.
Oddtoberfest.
Was it busy?
It was busy-ish.
Okay.
It wasn't that. It was the weather wasn't that great.
Did you sell any books?
Yeah, I sold some books. I met some librarians, which is even more important because I want to get to their libraries.
Hugely important.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how to crack that nut on my books.
Well, they were there, and I talked to them and gave them
very
cards.
Cool.
And
yeah.
Yeah, so that's one thing I'd love
right.
more people to contact
sure.
me. I have a website.
What's the website?
It's Bev
okay.
Davis
All right.
Author
All right.
BevDavisAuthor.com.
BevDavisAuthor.com. That's all one word.
Yes.
Easy enough. Okay, BevDavisAuthor.com. Mm-hmm. And can listeners buy the books directly from you on the website?
You can buy them from me, and then you can also buy them from Amazon and okay. the word Verve.
Sure.
Or you can just contact me, and sure. I'll tell you where to
I'll tell you where to go. So these are hardcover. Are they available in hardcover only, or is there audiobook? Is there...
No, there's softcover, too.
There's softcover. Okay, yeah. So hardcover and softcover. It's a good-looking book.
And then I even have little creatures that go with it. I have an elephant.
Elephant,
and I have a stuffed monkey, and I have a stuffed peacock.
So the elephant has the ear?
Yeah, I have to do a little minor surgery on his ear.
Interesting. That is super cool. So it sounds like you're having a good time and you're helping to spread the word. What is the one thing that you'd like readers of the books to get out of the books?
You're not alone.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And, well, there's just so many. It's hard to say one thing, but sure. just, you're not alone. And
top three,
please
let's say.
Talk to somebody.
Okay.
You know, and make sure you're being heard.
Sure.
I don't know. There's so many levels. It's hard to.
All right. That's fair. Have you gotten some positive feedback from them?
A lot of positive feedback.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any from kids that are still in school?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
There's one child I know who has all three books, and he has them memorized.
Oh, wow.
And he's waiting for the next one. So, I don't know. He's got to wait. I would love to make it into a play.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What has to happen for that to happen?
I have to think about what I'm going to do next.
You
got to
get pen to paper or keyboard
yeah.
to computer.
Well, I have two grown children. They have their master's, their undergrads in musical theater. So.
Oh, that sounds like peanut butter and chocolate mixing together.
We'll see.
All right.
But yeah, that's one of the thoughts I've had, is to maybe take it to school and maybe
sure.
see if they would... make it into a play.
Sure.
Or work on it.
Right.
Maybe, I don't know.
Do they know this?
I think of things for a while and then I move
sure.
on. I'm processed slowly.
Sure. The Midwest decision making, right?
Yeah.
Someday.
Something.
Sure.
But
interesting.
I do follow through.
All right. Well, that's fair. That's
mm-hmm.
totally fair.
I do.
Awesome. Well, Bev, I appreciate you being on the show. This has been cool. You have explored a lot with your life, and the books are super cool.
Thank you.
And I feel like they serve a strong purpose that,
thank you.
For whatever reason, hasn't gone away yet. So, yeah, it can't hurt.
Don't think it will.
No, that's true. Hopefully I can limit it.
Limit it.
We'll just live with that, right?
We'll work on that.
This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draughton Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. Now, if you're listening to this on the web, we'd really like you to like, subscribe, share, spread the word that it's super awesome here, right? We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, and our guest, Bev Davis, who is author of Great Gray Meets New Friends, and Namaste, Great Gray, as well as the up-and-coming Winging It, which is coming in November. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right.
Mid-November.
And they can find you at BevDavisAuthor.com. Awesome. If you're interested in checking out the books, they can be found on Amazon as well as at BevDavisAuthor.com. Easy enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Thanks for being
yes.
on the show, Bev.
Thank you.
This has been fun. You got a good thing going here. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at SunPrairieMediaCenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at DraughtonCustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome and enjoy your business.